Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the parenting solution. And we're going to be taking your calls about how to make a difference in the lives of your kids. The numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach us on 001-760-918-4300. I will actually be talking throughout the show with my very special guest, Bill Cumming. Bill's a 30-year coaching veteran, and his work focuses on creating inspired environments where individuals can take responsibility for their lives and the organizations for which they work. But he's also a founding director of the Policy Institute for Public Education in Maine, and has done just phenomenal work with children and educators of children and parents of children and me, among other people. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. And anybody listening can forget everything Michael said and we'll start even. It'll be fine.
All right. So here's you know, I'm going to ask you the unfair question first, which is, what is for you, you know, to the extent that you can, if you were going to sum up what you have learned in working with kids and in environments both where kids thrive and where kids get off track, what's the essence of what you've learned about how we can create solutions in the lives of our kids?
Okay, two things. Love them absolutely, and that means not necessarily liking all of their behavior or whatever, but have there be no doubt at the end of the day, for that matter at the end of the hour or the minute, that you love them absolutely, and be as consistent as you possibly can. And in order to be consistent, I find that usually goes with at least taking a little time to get yourself in pretty decent shape so you maintain your equanimity. My experience is that when I'm not in great shape, I'm much more easily reactivated by anything, and the same is true for kids. So love them absolutely and be as consistent as you can.
And I know one of the pieces of advice I was once given, I interviewed an author named Alfie Cohn, who wrote a book called Unconditional Parenting. And one of the sort of more tongue-in-cheek pieces of advice that he offered was, don't be in a hurry.
Uh-huh.
And to me, in a funny way, that was the most important thing he said, because that really spoke to what you just pointed out, that, you know, when you're okay, you usually can find a way. But when, you know, what's going on with your kids is one more thing in the pile, it's often not your best work that gets done with them.
Absolutely.
So, listen, I want to go straight to the phones. If you want to get in with questions about how you can work more effectively with your own children, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. And we will begin with Halle in New York. Halle, did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, you did.
How about that? Okay, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Thank you. I have an 8-year-old who is a really good boy. He means well, but we're definitely having problems with his listening skills. So I'm just, like, running out of things to do. And I'm a counselor, and I just can't seem to be able to put my finger on what it is exactly that I need to do.
Very good.
To help him out in school, at home.
Okay. When you say listening skills, Holly, and by the way, there's the old adage about shoemaker's children. One of the things is it might be really helpful for you not to worry about you being a counselor, and your child should be absolutely perfect, therefore.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. So the thing that Michael said before about take a deep breath and relax, first of all, right at the moment, he's not listening particularly well. You love him absolutely, yes?
Oh, yeah. I tell him every night, every day, that I love him no matter what, you know.
Well, here's my question. My question is, have you asked him whether he gets it? All right. And
if he, like, actually believes what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the reason
He repeated it back to me. Like, I say to him, you know, I ask him, and he says, I know, Mommy, you love me no matter what.
Right.
You know.
All right.
But he knows. He knows
So he lets that in. He's willing to let that in.
Oh, yeah.
So how does not listening show up, Holly? What does it look like? You ask him to do things and he doesn't do it?
He doesn't do it.
Okay, great. So what happens when he doesn't do things?
I take things that are important to him away.
Uh-huh. Does he like that?
He doesn't like it at the moment, but it doesn't seem to be helping because he'll do the same thing again,
uh-huh,
like the next day, you know?
Okay. So have you ever, obviously he's got your attention right at the moment, yes?
Yes.
Good. So have you asked him, or could you imagine asking him why it is that he wants to get your attention? All right, because what he's clearly doing is looking to youngsters a lot earlier than eight, usually starting around two, sometimes even younger if they're incredibly bright, learn to figure out the game of what they can do to create an irritating situation with parents.
Mm.
And that depending on how irritated we get, they either continue what they're doing or escalate it. But they're trying to figure out, well, number one, they're trying to figure out who's in charge. But it also sounds like this young person may be trying to get your attention for some reason. Does he like how things are going right at the moment, or does he like being in trouble most of the time?
To me, it seems like he likes being in trouble most of the time. But when I ask him, he says, no, I don't like being in trouble. Then I say, well, why do you repeat the behavior that you know it's going to bring the punishment? That I, like I say to him, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. I explain everything to him, like step by step, and then he does it anyway.
Right.
And then he says, no, I don't like it. I don't like that. Don't do it, you know?
Okay, so well, the question I would ask him is, what is it that he wants to say to you? Why is it he's trying to get your attention, okay?
Yeah.
And then if he continues to do what he's doing, you have to recognize that he's making a choice to do that.
Right,
so he has to see that he can have it be one way or the other. And are you consistent with what you do?
Yes.
Yes,
unless if his grandmother's around, and then she, which is not that often.
That's
and
right.
She'll say, let him go in a pool, or let him do what he wants. And,
right.
You know. Then I have no control over him when his grandmother's over.
Well, actually you do, but you don't want to try retraining his grandmother. So
yeah,
we'll leave. We'll just call that grandmother time for the time being.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
grandmother's there, he knows he's going to get spoiled. So that you've decided that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But the fact is that when grandma's not there, you're going to be as consistent as you can.
Oh yeah.
The first question is you need to find out what he wants to say. And the other thing is that when he makes a choice, he needs to understand that that's what he's created. All right.
Right.
And he will. By the way, as soon as you take the idea that when you said you were a counselor and it bothers you that he's not listening, he's listening just fine. He hears perfectly. He's just being obstreperous. He's just being eight.
Yeah.
Okay? And he will continue to do that until there's something that comes along that causes him to want to act differently. Michael, you want to get into this?
Yeah, I just really to reinforce what Bill's saying from my own experience is that there's no question that when I'm willing to take the time to actually listen back. So even if what's being said doesn't sound very intelligent at first listen, there is a message being expressed. There's always, every behavior is a communication. And if you listen to what's being communicated and you continue to be loving and consistent in your communication, a two-way dialogue begins to happen. And the more you can hear what he's saying in his behavior, the easier it will be for him to learn to express it in other ways that are probably more palatable to both of you. So if are you willing to give that an experiment, to just play with that this week?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so fantastic. And so what I'd love is if you're willing at the forums, geniuscatalyst.com, at the radio show forums, you can let us know how it all goes.
Okay.
And happy exploring.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah,
you're
I
welcome.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
So let's go to Kathy in Calgary. Kathy, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Hi. I have an 11-year-old son who has been diagnosed with ODD. He's also gifted, so that means he's always 10 steps ahead of us. And I'm just wondering what would be the best way to deal with his behavior issues.
Well, I've got a quick question for you, Kathy, which is,
yeah.
I'm looking on my screen here, and it says, son with odd. What does ODD stand for?
Oppositional Defiance Disorder.
Okay. Now, okay. If I'm going to make up what that means, it means that he doesn't do what he's told.
You say black, he says white.
Right. Got it.
Anything to pick a fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you happen to listen, Kathy, to what we were talking about with Holly?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Have you asked this young man what it is he really wants to communicate?
You know, this is a behavior that's been there pretty much since day one.
Uh huh.
And yes, we have asked him, but you get the same, I'm not sure why I do this, I know I shouldn't do this.
But you see, Michael used the word why. That's not a question I ask children.
Right. Right. No,
the, other than why is the sky, I think the questions like why is the sky blue is a good question. But
right.
Why, I know why youngsters act out. They act out because they want somebody's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And there are only two ways to be in the world. One is where you're constructive and contributory and doing things that you think are useful and productive. And the other is to cause waves,
right?
Irritation, things like that.
Right.
First of all, how? Give me an example of how this shows up, Kathy.
It's more at the moment. It's more with authority figures, more with his teachers, people at school.
Mm-hmm.
He has calmed down considerably compared to 3 years ago.
Okay.
Good. I've learned not to react.
Very good.
I know that's what he's looking for.
Right.
But of course, when you're in a classroom with 28 other children, it's difficult for a teacher not to react.
Right. And he's also learned at age 11 that he can, by various actions, create adult tantrums, which are
right.
fun to watch.
Right.
And a distraction and keep us from doing other things that may not be as exciting as
right.
watching that. The question is, does he see any value in those activities where those adults are present?
I think it's just fun for him.
I got that. Now,
you know, I think
well,
that's his
very
value.
Good. Well, he can continue to do that, but mm-hmm. the chances of him getting any value out of the environment that he's working in, he's very bright, which
yes,
means
he
probably doesn't need most of the academic stuff that's going on.
Right.
So the question is, would he be willing to consider the best interest of other people involved?
At times he is.
Okay.
And then there's, it's like there's two of him.
All right.
He can be the most loving, most wonderful, most helpful child in the world. And suddenly there's like this cloak that comes over him and makes him evil.
Well, okay.
You know, I mean, not that I think he's evil, but.
Very good. Excellent. Well, but the thing is, we got to really be careful with the words because they internalize that as if we did. And I know you didn't mean
would
that.
Would never, never say it to him. Never.
Got it.
Never. Love him to death. He's cool.
I got it. The thing that is important is that every kind of behavior imaginable is inside of all of us.
Right.
The great lie is that it isn't.
Okay.
The only question is, what gets watered? Now, somewhere along the line, and some clever person has come up now with a name for it that, like Michael, I had not heard of ODD before.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, now we've got another name for a consistent pattern of behavior.
Right.
Well, that pattern of behavior, what's this young man's name?
His name's Evan.
Yeah, I guarantee you that Evan can change that pattern if Evan wants to.
Right.
The question is, how can he create something of value for himself without creating a distraction for other people? Because mm-hmm. if you play that distraction out, he's 11 now, you
mm-hmm.
play that out till he's 15, and what does that look like?
Well, that's what I'm afraid of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is, the question needs to be to Evan, how is it that he wants his life to be?
Right.
Does he want his life to be meaningful and productive and contributory, joyous, all of those things?
Right.
And if he does, then he might want to look at starting to act in those kinds of ways. And when
mm-hmm.
I say have this conversation, I don't mean have it once and then let it go.
No, no.
One of the things is that we tell kids to have a nice day, which means the circumstances will dictate how the day turns out. I ask young people and adults to say, make yourself a good day. David Hartman, who started the
okay.
Good Morning America program, used to sign off his program by saying, make yourself a good day. And the first time I heard it, it was like getting hit with a 2x4.
Right.
Make gives Evan and every other youngster the opportunity to say, wait a minute, how is it I want today to be? If I do these things, I'm going to get a reaction. But I'm really not going to get any long-term benefit, and neither are the 27 other kids who are taking up, you know, watching me entertain the teacher.
Right. Okay.
What kind of a day does he want to make for himself? And at the end of the day, don't ask him what happened. Say, what did you create? What happened?
Okay.
Tell me about what's going on.
And Kathy, what's great about that, and one of the things that you'll find is when he really gets that he's doing it, that it is up to him,
right.
He will more and more, you know, pick and choose his moments. And that's
right.
not to say that he won't continue on occasion to choose things that you would rather he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is that as soon as he's really gets that he's creating it and that he's
right.
also then creating the consequences that come with it, he's
right.
going to get more and more discerning.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you very much for phoning in.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. So We are coming up on a break. Gene in Charlottesville, you're next up on the roster. If you want to get in the next segment, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. That's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. And you can listen to the show while you're on hold from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. We're talking about the parenting solution, and we're talking with my good friend, one of my mentors, Bill Cumming. You can find out more about Bill and his work at www.oneperson, the number, the letters, oneperson.net. And we will be right back with more after this.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the parenting solution. We're talking with Bill Cumming. Bill is the creator of Motivation, What Works, What One Person Can Do, and the Power Within courses, all of which encourage ownership, responsibility, and teamwork. And he's known for his ability to work and be with people in such a way that they feel honored, acknowledged, and valued as human beings. And, you know, I'm obviously reading from a sheet of paper, but it's also all true. So, Bill, before we go back to the phones, and we will be going back to the phones, if you want to have your questions answered about any parenting challenges you're having with your own kids, the number is 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 1-866-254-1579. Before the break, I mean, I know there are some general things that normally you would say to people before you engaged in the way that just the context of a radio show is causing you to...
Yes.
To engage. So what are some of the general frameworks you put around the conversations you have with people?
The first one, and probably most important, which is why I wanted to make sure we got to it during this segment, is I forgot to say that the only advice I ever give is don't take anybody's advice, because what we've just been doing is, for all extents and purposes, giving advice. Those are our opinions, our notions about things. My real sense is that people know when they hear something that resonates for them. The important thing is what we said at the outset, love the children and be consistent. Notice that the consistency does not describe whether or not you're liberal about order in the house or conservative, i.e. everything in its place and everything has a place and everything in its place. So please don't hear any of this as advice. These are just ideas and notions based on my experience, and it's important for people to trust their own guts. That's the really important thing.
Yeah, and actually, I want to add to that, because I think one of the things that I really learned from you in the way that we parent our kids is that along with the love and the consistency is clarity. That in order for somebody to follow the rules, they actually need to first know exactly what they are. And that was a bit revelatory for me. Because oftentimes we hadn't decided. It was like, well, today the rule is this.
Right.
And consistency is a lot easier when clarity comes with it. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Gene in Charlottesville, Virginia. Gene, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Gene.
Hi. I have a question, Bill. We're going to be adopting a second child in our home, and I'm wondering what's the best way to prepare my 3-year-old for that major transition.
And Gene, can I just ask you to speak up a little bit as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Is that better?
That's perfect.
Yes, okay. Much better.
So my question is how to best help my 3-year-old in the next, it's going to be about a year till this happens, but we're adopting a second child, and how to prepare her for that transition so that it can be, you know, the most loving experience for her.
Great. First of all, have you talked with her about the possibility now?
I have.
Okay, great. And how does she feel about it?
Oh, she's very excited. She wants a sister and a brother. And I told
okay.
her that we were really only getting one.
All right. Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
So the thing that you can do most importantly is continue to love her. Don't do anything you wouldn't do other than welcome this new member into the household and give her an opportunity to help out in any way she possibly can so she develops a sense of real inclusion in that process. One of the things I want to say about adopted children, and I took in a passel along the way, so I have a little experience with this. Often I don't know what the background is, and you don't need to tell me anything you may not know. But youngsters who are in an adoptive situation are usually there because there has been an issue, a problem, damage. If nothing else, maybe the parents didn't survive. Who knows what the situation is? Those youngsters in particular need to know they're really loved and that there's a rock-solid ground of being in this particular home environment. The other thing is that there are going to be things oftentimes that need to be processed through, and you'll need to do that. Just be mindful of that. The uncommunicated and the unknown all can be taken care of with adoptive youngsters as long as you're open to whatever they're telling you. But going back to your original question, just include her as much as you possibly can. And if there are things that you are willing to allow her to participate, if you create a new room for this young person, let her participate in that process, et cetera.
So in terms of bringing that child into her room, is there any advice on that?
I don't have an opinion about it. That's purely, do you have enough space to have each have their own rooms?
We could finagle it. I mean, it would be a big change.
Okay. Maybe. I don't think, how does she feel about that?
We haven't talked about that yet.
Okay. Well, one of the things I will say is you never give children anything as if there's going to be a choice if there's no choice.
Right.
If this youngster is going in her room and that's the way it is, that's what she needs to know.
Okay.
Human beings are incredibly adaptable as long as they hear the truth in a loving way. So if she's going to have a roommate, she's going to have a roommate, and then we can talk about what, if anything, we need to do with the room and let her participate in that process. I don't think there's any magic. I know youngsters that grew up, you know, four to a bed, literally, and they're fine. I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way. It's all different. That's all.
Okay. Would there be any drawbacks to her for us to consider a sibling, a group to adopt two children rather than one?
Well, I don't think there's anything that's going to be specifically a detriment in that regard. But that then becomes, especially if you adopt siblings, mm-hmm. They know each other, and so there'll be a group into which she is not immediately included.
Right.
All right. But again, by encouraging that kind of inclusion, and as Michael mentioned before, talking to them directly about exactly these issues. How old are these youngsters?
Well, she is 3 going on 4, and they won't, the rules are we can only adopt children younger than her. So we haven't picked out 2 children yet, but they would be under 3.
Okay, so, but by the time this happens, she'll be 4 roughly, and so they'll be in the 3-4.
And they would be under 3.
As long as you create an atmosphere where the goal is cooperation and those kinds of things, it will all work out. I'm not sure there's an advantage to one or the other, but there's a different dynamic. As I say, if you're adopting siblings and they arrive already as a group, that's all.
Okay.
So, Jean, there's one thing I'd like to add, which is just be aware of, and it doesn't necessarily sound like you're doing this, but over-focusing on what you want to avoid.
Yeah.
Because there is an element to which it's incredibly useful to go through and look at the potential problems and do what you can to, you know, mitigate them and make them not happen. But it's also possible to create them by putting all your energy there.
Absolutely.
And to the extent that you can keep your focus on creating the kind of home environment that you want to create as an optimal place for your kids to grow up, that is what you will create.
Yeah, let me talk a little more about that same thing, Michael, if I may. Focusing on anything that you want to avoid is like, well, we don't want there to be contention in the house. Well, that means that what you're thinking about every moment is no contention. How do we keep no contention? Just the thought of that is what creates it, as Michael describes it. Keep everything, context is the space in which things take place. If you come from that place of loving kindness, if you come from a place of workability, whatever arises, you will deal with. So always focus on what it is you want to create, not what you want to avoid. Excellent, Michael.
Thanks so much, Jean. We're going to be sending you positive thoughts and wishing you luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Estella in Oregon. Estella, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Yeah, I have a question about my son, kind of similar to the first two callers you had. He just doesn't want to listen. He's seven, and he's clearly making a choice. He's actually expressed that to me, that he doesn't listen because he doesn't like being told what to do.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I had a discussion with him. He asked me what I liked about being self-employed as opposed to when I had a job in an office, and I told him that, you know, I like not having a boss and that, you know, nobody tells me what to do. And he said, yeah, me too, Mom. You know, that's why I don't listen. I don't like being told what to do.
Uh-huh.
So he's making a choice.
No, absolutely. But there's one basic issue that has not been addressed. In this particular case, it's not an employer and employee situation. This is a parent-child situation, and you invited him into your world. So who gets the last word in the house?
Lately he does.
Right, I got it. How old is he, Stella?
He's seven.
Okay, great. If he gets the last word now and he's seven, who's in charge of the car when he's 16?
Yeah, I know. And I mean, that's why I want to get this under control now, because, you know, he's a big kid. You know, he's going to be very tall. My husband is 6'8". He's going to be tall like him. And I don't want one day him looking down on me.
Very good. Know. Excellent. So what he needs to know is that it is going to be the way you say it's going to be, and that's all there is on that. Okay, my children used to refer to my parenting style as a benevolent dictatorship, which meant that we got to discuss everything, but when I made my mind up, that's where it got to be. Now, they will also tell you that on certain occasions when they wanted to do certain things and I said absolutely not, they said, well, I'll just go get another place to live. And I said, absolutely, you know, pack carefully on your way out the door. Now, they didn't go, and my intention was not to have them leave, nor do I want them to leave, but the fact of the matter is you have to decide who gets the last word. If there's any confusion about that, what young people will continue to do is find out where the line is. And if they keep having the ability to move the line, you're not in charge anymore. So you might want to apologize to this young man for the last couple of years where it looks like he was in charge, and tell him you talked to this foolish person on the radio who told you you could be in charge today, and the way it's been is over. you understand? Go ahead,
yeah,
Michael.
It's easier said than done, though. I mean,
you have to decide whether you want. This is one where this is about how clear you are. If you're clear that things are going to be in the house the way you want them to be, and you love him, you will find a way to communicate that to him, that it is not something that's negotiable. All right, you have to decide that. The real trouble comes if you don't decide it now and it goes on for a couple of years, then there will be real trouble.
And I just want to throw something into the mix, Estella, because there were two things that I found very useful as sort of guidelines as I move forward. And one is don't negotiate the non-negotiable, which is sort of just a way of thinking about what Bill's been saying, is that, you know, when something is really, you know, that they've got a choice about, that your son has a say in, by all means, you know, allow him that say. If you already have made your mind up, if you present it in a way, and a lot of parents do this thinking, well, I don't want to just tell him what to do, so I'll make it seem like I'm letting him choose. If it's not a real choice, kids are really bright. And
mm-hmm.
and they will simply tune that out because they know, well, Mom's lying again. You know, it's not a deliberate lie. It's not a lie of with any intent to harm. But, you know, there's something wonderful about telling your kids the truth, even when they don't like it and even when they pretend not to hear it. The other thing that I have found just a real surprise in watching my own kids is, even though they love to be in charge in theory, in practice, they seem terrified to me when we let them. In other words, the more clear we are and consistent we are in the rules as we, you know, decide them to be, the happier, more content, and more peaceful I notice our kids to be. The more we allow flexibility and fluidity and, hey, you know, well, you know, it's Thursday, so do it this way. Or, you know what, you decide. Even though everything in them seems to want that, when they actually have it, it seems to terrify them. And the way that I sometimes, you know, think about that is, I imagine, you know, how scary it is at times for me to be 40 years old and trying to make my way in the world. And then I imagine being given the degree of responsibility and freedom that I have now at the age of seven. And I go, ah, You know, so even if your son is not fully enthusiastic in his gratitude for your laying down the law, at another level, it's a very kind thing to do.
It's hard to find consequences that work, though, that really motivate him.
Okay, well, those are all in the neighborhood of behavior modification, and those might work from time to time, but there are a couple things that the key off what Michael said. First of all, everything you say must be absolutely consistent, all right? If you're going on a car trip this Saturday and he's going, then he's going. It's not negotiable, all right? If he's to clean his room, then nothing else happens until the room is clean. Okay, we're not having anything else happen. The other thing is, it's very important not to say things unless you absolutely mean them. It goes with what Michael's saying. If there's no choice, don't offer a choice. But it also means don't say things. Threats are not a good idea. My experience with behavior modification is that's not the issue. The question is whether he would like to live in a situation which is workable. If workable situations are built on the notion that he gets to be a participant and a contributor. Now, this can either be a contentious situation or it can be an easy, wonderful, contributory situation. That choice is up to him. All right?
We're coming to
can
the end
go
of time.
Over?
I was going to say, Estella, if you hang out with us over the break, then
okay.
then we can pick up on this when we come back.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, so we will be back. We're talking about the parenting solution. If you want to get in with your own questions about how you can create workability with your own children, the numbers to call are 1-866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach us on 001-760-918-4300. If you want to find out more about Bill Cumming and what he does in the world, go to www.oneperson, that's oneperson.net. And if you want to find out more about me, the place to go is www.geniuscatalyst.com. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back and we're talking about parenting and we're talking with Bill Cumming. In 1964, Bill founded a Ford Foundation project, which became a pilot for Upward Bound, and also spent 13 years as an adjunct member of the faculty in the College of Education at the University of Maine.
Stop reading that stuff.
Oh, come
Michael.
On, Bill. It's my job. I'm here to pump you up.
Thank you.
Basically, here's the short version. Bill is really cool. His work in the world is wonderful, and you can find out more about it at www.oneperson.net. Commercial over. Back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Let's bring Estella back on the line. Estella, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay, fantastic. Okay, I'm going to reconnect you with Bill.
Estella, the thing I wanted to say and the reason I wanted to carry over is just for a moment. Have you asked him how he would really like things to be in the house? Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
Okay, because he already knows what's going on, and I'm sure he's not really comfortable with it either. And what I heard in your voice was it doesn't seem like anything's working here, a kind of helplessness kind of thing.
And if I could go back to the example you gave about, if I ask him to clean the room, nothing happens till he cleans the room. Like, I can get him to clean his room, but it's after, asking five times, which starts out me nicely asking and ends in me yelling, go clean your room.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to just say it once, go clean your room, and then it's done.
Because
exhausting having, that's why I feel like there needs to be a consequence for him not doing it the first time.
I got it. And you can modify his behavior, but I'm going to tell you that it's not nearly as valuable as him choosing to change his behavior, which is where I'm going.
Okay.
I want to explain a little game called the 100-100 game. The 100-100 game is where everybody in a household decides how they really want things to be. For example, if you have two people, normally we try to split things up 50-50. That means each person's putting in 50% of the energy. Well, I don't know any places that work like that. Most times one person puts in 60 and the other puts in 40. So we're always worried about who's done their share, that kind of thing. What I'm suggesting, how many people are in your household? You and he and someone else?
And my husband, and I have a 2-year-old daughter.
Wonderful. Well, the 2-year-old can participate to the degree that she's able to walk. If she can walk, she can carry laundry, so whatever. The game is everybody puts in 100%, does what's wanted and needed, and then we help everybody else accomplish their needs. When he's 16, does he want to have a car, does he think?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You might want to ask those questions, because if he does, one of the things that would increase the likelihood of his getting a car is having the next 9 years be about how wonderful it was to have him around, how helpful and useful and constructive he was. Or we can have this continual hassle, all the frustration and all that other stuff, and then does he think his chances are going to be greater or lesser about all that stuff later on? You see where I'm going with this? You got to ask him how he really wants it. I don't think he really wants it to be a constant hassle. But the other thing is that when you're feeling like there isn't anybody you can talk to, it's really good to talk to somebody you know who did this really well. Okay, talk to somebody who's what I call a master at that. And you know those people. If you don't know those people, I do. So call me. But again, ask him how he'd like it to be and whether he would like this to be easy and loving and friendly and supportive of one another, and see whether you can get him enrolled in the 100-100 game.
Okay.
That makes sense. Again, Estella, it would just be great for people listening if you're willing to come share how you get on with that at on the forums at geniuscatalyst.com. And of course, I'll also check in with that, and I may even talk Bill into coming down, and we can sort of play next steps, according to what happened.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for phoning
in. Thank
you
guys.
Okay, so Bill, there's something there that I really wanted to pick up on, because it's something because I know you, am aware of, but is so counter to most parenting advice that I hear, which is recognizing behavioral modification as a choice, but not necessarily the best choice in terms of long-term results. And
correct.
I'm just wondering if we can pick up on that and talk about that a bit more.
Absolutely. There are all kinds of behavior modification. Some of them use positive rewards. Some of them use negative rewards. All of those things are fine as techniques, but they're not really what you want to have ultimately happen. The ultimate goal is for every youngster to realize that they can create for themselves a life of value and purpose. Now, you don't have a philosophical conversation with a 7-year-old about that, but you can, for example, in the last example, ask the youngster whether he likes being hassled and nagged all the time. Well, then there's another alternative. He could do it immediately. But the reason oftentimes he doesn't do it immediately is that there's a game being played. Well, how about another game? If he started to do things that he thought were constructive, not only in cleaning his room, but in helping out around the house, and that seemed to improve the atmosphere, would that be something he wanted? Well, the minute that starts, and all of a sudden he begins to realize he's in charge of his life, not just in terms of his room. Intrinsic motivation that youngsters have a sense where they can take charge of their lives. And I do mean this even in the smallest of senses. Have we got time for a little story,
yeah,
Michael?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, one of my grandchildren, who's now 21, oh, goodness. when she was very young, her mom brought her to the house, and she warned me that she had discovered that food was also a pretty nice toy because it flew through the air. Well, at that time, I was taking care of my dad, and my children were, I don't know, teenagers, I think, at the time. But in any case, Amy came to the table, and we had a conversation about throwing of the food, because Grandpa was pretty, he pretty much liked decorum around the table. And so we had a little conversation with Amy, and she said she understood what I said. And there was a point at which I could see her look at me, look at the food, arm the spoon, load it, and looked right at me, and it wasn't looking at where the food went, just let go of it. And I said, okay, got it, Ames, thanks. And I said, and dinner is over. And so I took her, I think she was maybe 2, and I took her and I put her down out in a room right next to the dining room where she could play quietly, and she proceeded to become very upset. I can't imagine why. Anyway, she came very upset, and so I went into her and I said, now, Amy, there are 2 choices here. Is it clear to you that you're not coming back to the table no matter what happens? And now you have 2 choices. If you want to stay and have a tantrum and all that stuff, you can go to bed early, or you can get involved in something you want to do, quiet down, and then we'll have normal bedtime. We'll read and, play some games and whatever. That's your choice. It's up to you. And I walked away, and the crying lasted about 4 steps. I walked back to the table, sat down. She sat there. Played some games. We had a wonderful bedtime, and she went to sleep very soundly, and her mom came home from the store. Next morning, Susan comes downstairs and says to me, what did you do to Amy? And I said, I didn't do anything to Amy. She said, she got up this morning, she said, I not throw food anymore. A two-year-old, okay?
And it reminds me of, you know, Stephen Covey in The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he defines responsibility as the ability to choose your response.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've really learned is that when I encourage the kids to take responsibility for their lives, just by highlighting the choices that they're making, and the consequences those choices bring, not in terms of the extra ones I'm going to impose in a behavioral modification sense, but in terms of, well, look, this is the impact on the environment. This is how your, you know, friends are apparently react when you make that choice. This is how your teachers react. What they're essentially learning is that they can't escape reaping what they sow. In other words, so forget the behavioral modification stuff. Life brings its own consequences.
Correct.
Covey calls the law of the farm. And I have noticed again and again, not just with my own kids, but when somebody realizes that the kind of day that they're going to have isn't down to their circumstances or isn't down to you, but it really is up to them. A lot of people resist it like crazy, but once they get it, oh, the freedom in that.
Absolutely. No question about it. And the other thing is, going back to the behavior modification, those are all systems that do exactly that, modify somebody's behavior. But that means once the modifier is gone, nothing has really taken place. One of my clients is the Job Corps program in various locations. When I met one of the best directors of any kind of nonprofit I've ever seen, just a great gal, first time I'd met her, this is graduation day, and I had given a small commencement address, and this youngster raced up to her after graduation and said, Mrs. Johnson, this is the best program. It's changed my life, this, that, and the other thing. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it and everything else. And the youngster started to walk away, and I said, Eunice, you got a problem. And she said, she didn't know me, and she came to know that I would say anything. And I said, well, the problem is he just acknowledged you for how great the program was, and it was the program that changed his life. Today was graduation. Now, what does that mean? And she got it instantaneously, raced after the youngster and said, the program was only a vehicle. Do you understand that you're the one who made this change, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is, if we look at things from a behavioral point of view, you really don't want to modify somebody's behavior. You want them to discover inside of themselves that how today turns out, how tomorrow turns out, is absolutely up to them.
And one of the ways that I particularly notice that you can start to see it is in the language that people use. And very often what people do, and I'm going to include myself in people here, you know, what the heck. But one of the things that they do is they'll attribute characteristics to an event or to something outside. So this is a stressful situation.
Absolutely.
This is a difficult child. This is an uncomfortable pause.
Right. No such thing in any of those cases.
Exactly. And when you begin to see that the quality of the situation is something that you are bringing to it, that opens up the possibility of bringing something else to it. There's a question I just want to steer us towards as we're coming towards the end of the show, because for me, this was one of the most important questions I learned to ask and begin to play with ways of answering. And I don't think you and I have ever quite had this conversation explicitly. But the question that I used to play with is, how, if I really want to be unconditionally loving, and my favorite definition of unconditional love is from Philip Yancey's book, What's So Amazing About Grace, and he describes God's unconditional love as a love in which nothing you can do will make God love you any less, and nothing you can do will make God love you any more.
Perfect.
And for me, the question that then led me to is, how do I discipline and motivate my children if I'm not allowed, and that's just arbitrary because I'm not going to allow myself, if I'm not allowed to selectively withhold my love and approval?
Okay. That's a spectacular question. In the first place, the notion that you can discipline your children or motivate them, both of those are erroneous. You can physically discipline children, i.e. modify their behavior, spank them, or things like that, if you choose to. But that's I'll come back to that in a minute. And the truth is, you couldn't motivate anybody if your life depended on it. You can, however, create an environment in which they're much more likely to make the choices you want them to make. If I love you absolutely, that does not mean I tolerate inappropriate behavior. It means that inappropriate behavior is not going to happen, and therefore sometimes there are consequences for inappropriate behavior, which is not a behavior modification process, but simply a matter of rocks are hard and water's wet, and we don't throw food. It's not a matter and the other thing is, in terms of motivating them, the ultimate motivation is a youngster deciding how it is they intend for their lives to be. And even at age two, Amy was able to figure out that she didn't want to throw food again because she didn't like the consequence, right? And that's, again, where the importance of being consistent comes from. Is that enough on that, Michael? Because I want to go back to the issue of stress and a couple of those things, because as adults, the words that we use are very, very, very important.
Absolutely. And I'm going to ask you for the one-minute version.
Okay. Stress is a function of not seeing where the choice is. There's actually nothing that's stressful in and of itself. All right. The other thing is, we do things like we use boredom as if it actually existed. The truth is, if you want to be bored in life, you'll be bored. When youngsters say they're bored, we need to congratulate them for being powerful enough to have created it, as opposed to the fact that it actually exists. Every single time they see those kinds of things as choices, all of a sudden they're in charge of their own lives.
So if there was a, and this is again another one of these completely unfair questions, but if there was one shift, one idea, one thing that somebody listening could implement to begin to make their relationship with their kids better, more the way they wanted it, what would you recommend?
Before you open your mouth, make sure you're absolutely in a place of loving kindness, that the intention of your communication is not to modify their behavior or anything else. Make sure you're completely in the space of loving kindness before you open your mouth.
Bill, a pleasure as always. My very special guest today has been Bill Cumming. You can find out more about Bill and Bill's work at www.oneperson.net. That's the letters O-N-E person.net. If you've enjoyed the show, there are a few additional shows you can find in the Hay House archives on parenting and unconditional parenting. Also, if you're a member of the Solutions Cafe at geniuscatalyst.com, I recommend the interview that we did with Alfie Cohn on unconditional parenting. We will be back soon. My thanks to Bill Cumming and to Roberto, Emily, and Sonny in the studio for keeping us on air and mostly mostly sensible. And I will look forward to speaking with you all again soon. Thank you for listening, and goodbye for now.